says to them, "Brethren, listen to what we say. There was a time when our forefathers owned this great island," meaning the continent of North America, a common belief among the Indians. The Great Spirit had made it for the use of the Indians. So even this expression we find used in the Book of Mormon, an isle of the sea, is found in the traditions of the Indian people. And finally, I guess I'd like to just take a moment and say, you know, if this story be true, then we would expect among the traditions of the Indian people to find a tradition that their forefathers had known or mingled with white men, Caucasian, Semitic type people. And so I'd like to read here now a few traditions of the Indian people about their forefathers. First of all, Kohain, speaking of a celebrated stone of the 12 angels in an Incan wall, says this: "Such expertly cut and fitted stones with terraces, arches, and other details common to prehistoric native architecture lend physical support to Incan legends that their earliest civilization was founded by white-skinned strangers who traveled across the sea from the east." And Osborne, an archaeologist, says, "Before the Incas reigned over them, many of these Indians of the Callao say that there were two great lords in the province, and one of them entered the larger of the two islands in Lake Titicaca, that's in Bolivia, and found there a race of white people with beards and fought with them until he had killed them all." And so we find in the traditions of these people, certainly we find traditions that they believed that their forefathers had come into contact with white-skinned people. But you know, not only that, when the Spaniard conquistadors arrived here in this land, they found white people. I'd like to read here from a book by Pedro Pizarro, who was the brother of the conquistador of Peru. Pedro Pizarro wrote this: "The ruling class in the kingdom of Peru were fair-skinned, with fair hair about the color of ripe wheat. Most of the great lords and ladies looked white like Spaniards. And in that country I met an Indian woman with her child, both so fair-skinned that they were hardly distinguishable from the fair white men. Their fellow countrymen called them the children of the gods." And now I'm going to just point out the fact that they still exist. Those white Indian people are still here. You know, the descendants of these very travelers that this book tells us about, they're still here in the Americas. And I'd like to read now from an explorer named Savoy, who studied the legends of the Inca, and studying the legends of the Inca people about a white people that lived over on the eastern side of the Andes Mountains. He made a trip over there to see if he could find them. And this is what he wrote: "While exploring the forests of the upper Amazon region of Peru, looking for physical evidence of such white Indians, Savoy records the following experience. One day, while walking down a trail, I was startled to see coming out of the jungle five tall, blue-eyed men with long blonde hair. As I came into the village, my eyes recorded things I hadn't expected to see. Among the children playing in the plaza, typically dark-skinned, were many who were fair, blue-eyed, or green-eyed with blonde hair. So it went from village to village, living evidence that white men had occupied and are still occupying the area. Everywhere I went, the people talked of an ancient, learned man who, like themselves, was fair-skinned. He had lived centuries earlier and had taught the peoples the civilized arts and sciences of a new religion." And one final article from the Arizona Republic, written by a professor of Mediterranean languages. His name is Cyrus Gordon. He believes, like we believe, that there were people from a Jewish background who came to the Americas and settled here and had an influence upon the history of this land. This is what he writes, is how the paper quoted him. This is what the article was titled, "Jews Discovered America First," professor says. And then in the article it says this: "Cyrus H. Gordon, professor of Mediterranean Studies at Brandeis University, said the evidence is an inscription found in a burial mound in Tennessee in 1885. The archaeological circumstances of the discovery rule out any chance of fraud or forgery, and the inscription attests to a migration of Jews." Gordon, who presented the findings to a meeting of the North Shore Archaeological Society on Long Island, said, "Scholars must now reach other findings. And we believe that's true also. It's time that scholars began to analyze other ideas when they're concerning themselves with the origin of peoples in America. In eastern Tennessee, for example, there's a group of people known as the Melungeons, who are neither Indian nor Negro, who are Caucasian but not Anglo-Saxon. They are, Gordon indicated, descendants of a Mediterranean people, and they believe, this is what they believe they came to the New World in ships about 2,000 years before Columbus. Well, Columbus came here in about 1492. 2,000 years before that would be about 500 B.C., just a few years off from when this record here says people arrived from the Mediterranean world. Well, I'm going to close by asking you to look at the very last verse. Where were we reading in chapter 5? No, I don't like chapter 5. Let's look at chapter 2. Chapter 2, chapter 7, chapter 1, I believe, all end like this. If you'll look on page 23, you remember when we first started, we talked about the fact that Nephi had made a statement. Nephi made a statement, and he said that he was going to write this record in the language of the Jews and of the Egyptians. I have some Egyptian up here. I don't know if you can read it or not. Egyptian's kind of hard to read. Egyptian's kind of hard to read because, like all Semitic languages, they don't put any vowels in there. You know, that's why you read in the Book of Mormon and you find two places where it refers to the people of Mulek, and one place is spelled differently than it is in the other place, because if the Semitic people were writing it, they would have just written it M-L-K. And you'd just have to guess at the vowels, you know. And so it would be very easy to make a mistake. You know, the Book of Mormon tells about a honeybee that was very important to people called Deseret. The Egyptians and the Babylonians and the people of the Middle East had a honeybee. And you know what its name was? Well, there it is. I don't know how to pronounce it because there aren't any vowels in it. But if you just put an E there and an E there and an E there, it would be Deseret, the honeybee of Egypt and of Babylonia and the ancient world, you know. And so Egyptian, here's an Egyptian ending for, this is how Egyptians ended their writings. And when it was translated, thus it is. And so we come to the end of chapter 2, and we read Nephi's expression, and thus it is, amen. And I believe, you know, that just, this is just a tiny little bit of a material that I think points out the fact that in the Book of Mormon, there's local color that nobody in New York would have known in 1829. There's things that are harmonious with the social, the geographic, the cultural organization of that time and of that area. The personal names in the Book of Mormon are Hebraic, a mixture of Hebraic and Egyptian, and they have no Baal names, and thank goodness they don't have any, because that's another evidence of its validity. The story is certainly reasonable, and there is a wonderful abundance of traditional and written affirmation of these main elements of the story of the Book of Mormon that are found in the writings and the beliefs, the legends of the peoples of the New World. So have faith, have hope, have a good, you have all kinds of reasons, you know, to be able to look anybody in the face and say, I know, not only because I have faith in this, but the Lord has given us ample evidence that there's reason to believe this book was written just by whom it claims to have been written by. People that lived in the 6th century B.C. had a knowledge of the Egyptians and the Hebrew. Thank you for your attention.